It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've just got off from the Apple education event. Andy Iannocco has run over to a studio so he can join Tanya Engst and Alex Lindsay as we talk about the new iPad and a lot more. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 603, recorded Tuesday, March 27th, 2018. An apple for the teacher. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Active Campaign. If you have a growing business and you want to acquire more customers, you need Active Campaign. Their solution goes beyond marketing automation to get the right type of message to the right person at the right time. For a free trial, go to activecampaign.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Hiring? ZipRecruiter's revolutionized how you do it. Their technology identifies people with the right experience, then invites them to apply to your job. Try it free today at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply, understand the entire mortgage process fully, and then be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And there is lots of news from Apple because they had their event today. Andy Iannocco is at the event. He's on his way back to the hotel room. We'll get him on in just a few minutes. He can give us his first-person reporting. Meanwhile, the rest of us who watched from afar, including Alex Lindsay, he's in Washington, D.C. at the PixelCore.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Alex. Good to have you. Did you? You couldn't really watch a stream, so I guess you like
I watch the feeds.
Watch the feeds, the live blogs. Yeah. Also with us from tidbits.com, the wonderful Tanya Engst. Hello, Tanya.
Hello, hello. It's great to be here.
Nice to see you. Did you? Whose coverage were you watching?
I was hanging out on an internal Slack board that we have just for Tidbit staffers, but we were watching, reading the live tweets from a bunch of folks, in particular Six Colors. That was a really nice one to pay attention to.
Jason Snell was there.
Mm-hmm.
So was Renee Ritchie. In fact, he's not here with us because he's in the classroom right now with Serenity Caldwell. in fact, there was a lot of coverage from people we know. Andy was there, Renee was there, Serenity, but also Harry McCracken, a lot of tech press there. Did Adam go?
No, we had a fellow, Julio Ortega, last name is escaping me. Ortega Zapata.
Ojeda Zapata. Yeah. Julio's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So he was working for you. That's right. He does some writing for Tidbits. I've seen his byline
there. I'm not sure if he was working exclusively for us, but he did write us an article. I'm not sure if we've got it posted yet, but it's definitely in progress today.
Nice. Yeah, Julio writes for the Minneapolis, he's a Twin Cities writer. I'm sorry, the St. Paul Pioneer Press.
Yeah.
There he is. Julio Ojeda Zapata. Great guy. Well, good.
Yeah, he was so excited to be there. He was having a good time.
I'm looking at the picture of the line waiting to get in at Chicago's Lane Tech College, which is, despite its name, a high school. A lot of people in the rain waiting to get in. It's a big school. Early on, Tim Cook said it produces more PhDs than any other high school in America. Of course, they don't get their PhDs there, but they go on to get PhDs. And it seems like it was a very good place to have this event. It is a public school in Chicago. Apple had, you know, there was a lot of speculation about what Apple would announce, but I can, in a nutshell, tell you what they announced, which was kind of what the minimum speculation was. A new sixth generation iPad featuring the A10 Fusion processor and pencil support. No smart connector for the keyboard, just pencil support. And it will be $329, the base price of the least expensive iPad up to now, $299 for educators. That's a 32-gig storage device, so it's kind of a minimally configured device. They still, nothing new about the pencil except a $10 price drop for education. It'll be $89. And there were a lot more software announcements than there were hardware announcements, although they did point out that Logitech is going to offer a $49 pencil for the new iPad. I presume with iPad Pro pencil capabilities, they're calling it looks like a crayon. It's a digital crayon. Logitech is offering a $90 keyboard design for this particular iPad, neither of which the crayon nor the keyboard will be available to the general public, but only to educators and students through Apple Education. So don't get your hopes up. It will be available later this summer. You can get, though, the new $329 sixth generation iPad is available for order today, and you'll be able to pick it up or get it delivered by the end of the week.
And this was not a big price drop, but just more features in the same price.
Yeah.
I mean, or, yeah.
Which is, I'm frankly a little disappointed. And I think, you know, what Apple was trying to do was get into the education market to fend off a real significant challenge, as we've talked about before, from the Google Chromebook. And I thought one way to do that would be to offer a lower price. They decided not to do that. They do say it's faster than a Chromebook. Somehow I don't know if schools really care about that. They talked a lot about software, and there is a lot of new software designed specifically for the classroom. I'll show you one of the videos they call homework.
Settle, please. Eyes up here. We're not done. Group three. Let's have Ivy and
Ivy
Michael.
Is not excited, nor is Michael.
Ryan, Sally, and Thomas.
None of them too excited or thrilled because they're about to get homework.
Your homework is to explore gravity.
I should point out he did not drop an iPad. And in fact, one of the weird things about this is all the kids have iPads, but none of them are in cases, which... of course, would never happen. Of course,
but Apple never shows them in
Friday,
cases.
Yeah,
they need cases.
Yeah,
Friday,
the keyboard cover on that one.
Homework.
Homework. Now, I think I'm not sure. Maybe Tanya, you know, it sounds like a Shel Silverstein poem.
It is. It is actually.
Okay.
Homework, or something like that. Yeah, it's Shel Silverstein.
Okay, listen.
Oh, homework. I hate you.
You're buying a watermelon.
I wish I could wash you away in this thing.
You guys ready?
If only a hippo would smash you to bits.
It dropped an egg and then a watermelon off. And it tastes good. That's going to be part of their gravity.
I'd rather take baths with a man-eating shark.
Notice the use of the pencil.
Wrestle a lion alone in the dark. Eat spinach and liver. Pet 10 porcupines.
They're dropping a mattress off the balcony. The parents are going to love that.
Action.
Making videos. Gravity-free environments. This is a lot of work these kids are putting in. I think Apple's saying...
Homework. Oh, homework.
The kids are doing this because they have iPads, right? Because otherwise they'd just be, you know, sitting at home watching TV.
You were last on my list. I simply can't see why you even exist.
It's the most creative kids I've ever heard of.
If you just disappeared, it would tickle me pink.
We gotta go.
Next up, group three.
Homework. Oh, homework. I hate you.
Now they're showing their video, but we won't get to see it because we are adults. And adults.
But I'm sure it was amazing.
I'm sure it was wonderful. So they have some new software that will let teachers monitor classroom performance, share assignments with kids. I think the biggest announcement from my point of view, from most people watching's point of view, is they're finally going to update iWork. And it looks like, and I bet you have some interest in this, Alex, they're going to take iBooks Author, which you were really excited about when it came out, but really did not take the world by storm. And they're going to fold all of its capabilities into Pages. So
well, we'll see if they fold all of them or most of them. I have a feeling that, I mean, for me, this is kind of falling backwards a little bit as far as going from iBook author to Pages. I mean, Pages is fine, and I'm sure that it'll be more. You'll get more books out of it than having a separate application. Now people can just use that. I think that not a lot of people use iBooks author, and not a lot of people use Pages, and so maybe you can get them to combine into a reasonable number of people. So I think that Pages has always been for me a little heavy. It just feels heavy when you use it. It's not as responsive. It has lots of great media tools that just feel slow when you're working with them. So, it's not something that I've used, that I even use heavily. And so I think it'll be, to create something that is a slightly better book, I think that Pages is going to be great. I still think they're missing the opportunity to build something great.
The new Pages will have pencil support. Users will be able to add drawings and use something called Smart Annotation. The underlines and annotations aren't just illustrations sitting on the page. They're somehow attached to the words around them. So I guess when you reflow the document, the annotations, you can see here in this animation that go around with it. Pages will also allow book authors to include photos, videos, graphics from Apple Pencil, and more. Share finished books into iBooks. That was kind of one of the key features of iBooks author. Group authoring will be enabled. Teachers can, in fact, group support for all the iWorks apps will be enabled. Teachers can annotate, send in documents to mark work. There'll be a new presenter mode in Pages, transforming the iPad into a teleprompter. You can set a screen of text to auto scroll at an adjustable speed. And then there's a new app for teachers called Schoolwork, which lets teachers dole out digital assignments to students. Apple also talked a little bit about the augmented reality capabilities of the new iPads. Actually, it's the same as the old iPads, except there's a faster processor. But they did point out that there are going to be a lot more AR apps for students in education. Schoolwork will also support ClassKit. We'd heard about ClassKit before. It's in iOS 11.3. That means third-party apps can link into and out of Schoolwork. So I imagine that'll happen as well. I am not an educator. I've had some, I've worked as a trustee for a high school for 6 years, and I have had kids, as you have, Tanya, in school, as you have, Alex, as well. I'm not blown away by this. I actually had hoped Apple would do maybe a little bit more for education. It's great that Apple celebrated education, but I thought they would do a little more. You agree, Tanya, or disagree?
Well, it seems incremental. There's nothing here that's really, surprising, but it seems as though Apple is kind of waving their hand and saying, hey, we are thinking about education and we are taking some baby steps. And a couple of the steps they took, I think the Schoolwork application, we have to see how it will really work in the real world, but it seems like a positive step. And one thing that I noticed was that they will now be supporting on iPads bought for education, the ability to have more than one account on an iPad.
That's huge.
That sounded awfully interesting, particularly for a school that's trying to get iPads into the classroom, but they can't afford one iPad per kid. That could be pretty huge, depending on how it works out. We don't want the kids to have to spend 20 minutes a day just logging in and out of their iPads, of course, but hopefully it will be much more smooth and elegant. So it feels like Apple's putting a number of things out there kind of almost to see what might become most popular, most used. They've got the AR, they've got the idea that kids could be doing a lot of digital media creation, they've got the pencil now, affordable, it's a much more affordable iPad that you can now use the pencil with. So it gives teachers a lot of different directions and schools a lot of different directions they could start moving ahead in if they so wish. Apple also, I think by making this announcement and choosing to go in this direction, they're saying once again that they're really not planning to come up with anything like a Chromebook competitor. Right. They're doing something really different.
Yeah, this isn't so different at all. In fact, Apple showed things like this, you know, dissect a frog application, Frogopedia, so you can dissect a frog with a pencil, but not a real frog. But this has been around for a while. What's new is that you can use a pencil to do the dissection. It's an augmented reality app. It might be better using a pencil than your finger. But yeah, I'm actually a little disappointed. I was hoping to see more, frankly, from Apple. Not necessarily more hardware, but just more aggressive support for education. Maybe even some subsidies and bigger discounts. It doesn't feel like this is something that is going to change the equation when it comes to schools and the iPad. Alex?
Yeah, I don't think they're trying to take over. I think that they are taking the schools that are on the edge and trying to lean them a little bit their direction. So they're handling a bunch of the management issues that were definitely way behind, and then trying to show where they stand out against the Chromebook. There's just a lot of those very interactive, very fun things that they're showing there are definitely more difficult to do on a Chromebook than they are on an iPad. Obviously not, they're not trying to be a Chromebook because that's going to be harder to go down that path. But I do think that they are trying to show where they tried to look for areas in the education market where they exemplify.
Although,
you know, where they stand
Google,
out. Where they
Google, before the event today, Google announced a Chrome OS tablet for $329. That's specifically, obviously, targeted against this $329 iPad. It's from Acer, and it's it has the Android apps on it as well as the Chrome OS apps. So it's going to be fairly, you know.
But that's still, like, if someone, I mean, I think it was great. It was key for Google to do that. I think that to put it in there to make sure that there's an even choice. Of course, the price points are the same, so now people have to look at whether they're. I mean, they could still use Google Classroom on the iPad. So do they want to take advantage of all the stuff that Apple's doing and take advantage of what Google's doing by using an iPad as opposed to the Chromebook? But if you're really happy with that ecosystem that you already probably have with the Chromebooks, it is a nice way to make sure that people stay in that fold, even if they've decided that a tablet is the right way to go. So I think it was a great thing for Google. I think that's part of why Apple probably pushed really heavily on, that they're going to put a bunch of support services out. There's things that are easier. I mean, you can definitely build a better document from a graphics perspective. You can build a better document pages than you could in the Google ecosphere. I mean, we use a lot of Google products in that area, but I wouldn't say that they're fun to use. they're useful, but somewhat, you know, a little bit painful.
Google, Apple just shipped out the updated pages. I just got it, and Keynote and Numbers just came out in the Apple store. So if you want to try pencil support. I'm waiting till Pages downloads here. Your kids, I know, Alex, love their iPad.
Yeah, they're on there. They probably spend more time than I should let them. But admittedly, I will say that a solid 25 to 30% of their time is on Roblox, on it. But the other time is spent taking pictures. And I mean, they know everything about that iPad, of how the iPads work and all the little bits and pieces. I can definitely, my plan when I get back from DC, which will be later this week, is to actually go through some of the things that they showed here and try to do them with my kids and see what they think and
see
whether
what
that's
reaction is. Yeah.
Whether they think that it's good and whether they can do it. They're 8 and 10, so they're probably a little lower than the target that they showed there. But I think that they're pretty precocious. I think they'll catch on.
Here, it starts when you launch the new pages. It starts with a video showing a pencil. It says, "Make your mark, get creative with artwork and annotations using Apple Pencil. You can also use your finger," which is very very reassuring. I should just download a document. Let's see. And open it, I guess, and see. Where do I go for pencil stuff? Let's see here. Collaboration, working on a document with others, invite them to edit in real time. By the way, that is one thing that's kind of cool, that you'll get 200 gigabytes of iCloud storage with your Classroom account, although Google offers unlimited storage with its account. So there's the sharing button. New shapes, enhance your document with a variety of new editable shapes. That's kind of cool. Let me look at the animals. So let's just
and that's all stuff that we've seen in Keynote. So all those shapes are shapes that are available in Keynote now. So those aren't nothing new except that they're available.
You put them in Pages. Smart annotation beta. Yeah. Tap to start adding marks that move with your content. Let's see. Tap. Oh, here we go. Here's an annotation, so I could circle that. And then if I take this goat, hello, goat, take this goat and move it in. Look, the almost moves around with it. Okay, that's cool. Smart annotation beta. Smart annotations follow your text. Okay, it's in beta, it says. All right. Well, it seems to work.
It's great.
Yeah. That's nice because, you know, they're not just a layer of ink on top of the screen.
Well, I mean, I can see that way beyond classrooms. I mean, that's, you know, being able to review documents and redline them and so on and so forth, underline things that you want to go through is useful way beyond school.
Change tracking, presenter mode. Yeah, you know, I mean, I haven't used Pages in a long time, but it does seem like there's quite a bit of new stuff. What's new in Pages? Let's take a look. Draw, write, annotate, create beautiful books in the EPUB format. Collaborate in real time on documents stored in Box. That's interesting, given that Apple has iCloud. Box, huh? Maybe schools like Box. That's odd that they wouldn't say collaborate with iCloud.
Yeah, I think the Box thing is a new addition in this version of Pages.
Yeah.
I assume that iCloud collaboration is still happening, so it seems like Box is just another new option.
One more thing. Okay.
Yeah. And one thing I'm very curious to know is one of the limitations of iBooks Author was if you wanted to create a book and sell it, you were limited to the iBook store.
Yeah, and I think this is, it says you can create documents that you could then sell. Yeah, you can then sell on the iBook store. So I think they're still pushing that as.
So I'll be.
But EPUB's an open standard, right? So
it's very easy to take an EPUB and convert it to, for example, a Mobi,
right,
which is what you would need to sell on Amazon.
Right.
But that was kind of not really permitted before. So if that's been stripped away, and I'm not saying it is because I haven't looked, but it's my guess, not only does that, you know, make it easier for people who really just want to do education stuff and maybe on the side sell their thing, but it may make Pages worth another look for your typical ebook publisher.
It says I can export now to EPUB, so that would imply, EPUB is here, that would imply that I could...
Yeah, with iBooks Author, it was actually in the license agreement. It wasn't like a technical...
Ah, they had the capability, right. Okay.
Yeah, but as a professional, you know, as an actual publisher, you wouldn't violate a license agreement.
But
it seems like for educators, though, now they don't have to go and learn a whole nother program, iBooks Author, even though a lot of iBooks Author was very similar to Pages. You could transfer a lot of the skills. I think if they can just have one program that they need to learn, their kids are doing word processing in Pages anyway, perhaps, and now they can do word processing in Pages and maybe get an ebook out of it without having to do a whole import-export layout thing, that may make it a whole lot easier to get a whole lot more informal publishing going on from the education market. That seems positive to me.
The few educators I've talked to since this announcement were generally very excited about the fact that Apple actually went to a school. And really, at the beginning, there was a lot of celebration of education in general. And I think they appreciate the attention they're getting. That's a big part, I mean, of just making you feel warm and fuzzy about Apple and education. So maybe that's all they really needed was that, you know, little PR push. I'm a little disappointed that there wasn't, I felt like we should maybe have seen more. Now in June at WWDC, of course, that'll be Apple's opportunity to update the MacBooks and the MacBook Pros and maybe even the MacBook Air. Who knows, maybe even the Mac Mini. So that's only a couple of months off. And June is the time frame for a lot of this stuff anyway for people to buy it, except for the iPad, which you can get today. We have so little. Usually after an Apple event, there's a two-hour show, and that's still not enough to talk about, but I feel like that's it, right? Is there anything more to say about the announcement today? When Andy joins us, we can get a little bit of a sense of what happened in the room, but...
Sure. I thought it was cool of Apple to focus on education as far as... what might be coming up at WWDC for announcements. We have a lot of time to speculate about that, and Apple has a lot of hardware that they might be telling us more about at that time. So that's kind of fun. It was interesting, I thought, that Apple chose to not have their event in Cupertino or in a, like, it wasn't really part of the music industry or anything like that. It was its own special event. I kind of hope Apple will do more of those in the future. I feel like the typical Apple announcement, it used to be so exciting, you know, with Steve Jobs or when Tim Cook was new, to have the kind of, you know, streamed event, very controlled from some kind of Apple-run, you know, theater situation. And I thought this was nice for a change, just that they did do something different, shake things up a little. They don't have to always keep on doing things exactly the same way. Maybe we'll see more of these, I don't know, more intimate events in the future.
Good point. A lot of the press were invited after the event to visit the classrooms at the school and actually sit in and watch active classrooms. Renee and the Serenity, I think, went to a math class.
Yeah.
So that's neat. It is a great thing to celebrate education. I'm glad, but I don't know if education is going to, I don't know if this is going to change Apple's position in education. I think people who are already in on iPads will welcome these new features, but I doubt that they're enough to convince somebody who isn't yet an iPad school to go out and get iPads.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the situation that a lot of school districts face, particularly public school districts, where there is not a lot of money to go around, and they're really going to go for the most affordable digital solution that they can find. Certainly in my home school district, the Ithaca City School District here in New York State, they went with Chromebooks, certainly on the high school level. They're just so affordable. It pointed out to me you can get a Chromebook for less than, you know, a textbook in some cases these days. And I was thinking, boy, it would be really nice to see Apple address that kind of problem. And they didn't really here. I mean, they did bring the Apple Pencil to a much more affordable iPad, which, you know, is a piece of the puzzle maybe, but they really didn't get in there and address low-income school districts, low-income folks, which... It seems like Apple is basically saying, you know, we've got a premium product and here are the great things we're doing with it. It's not ideal. Something Apple, it'd be great if they could address. It feels like right now kind of the DNA of the company is more about just that, making a premium product, pushing things forward.
And
what do you guys
think? Yeah, well, and also... and I mentioned this during iOS Today, and Alex, you're a creator. They talked a lot about creative tools with drawing and the pencils and video, you know, making books and stuff. But one thing the iPad isn't great at is, I think, one of the most fundamental creative skills that are really important for kids to learn, which is to write and to type things. And this is exactly where the iPad's a little bit weak, because it doesn't come with a keyboard. And it's great to, you know, and I know kids today love video and all that. And Alex, you know, Alex, am I an old fart? Is writing no longer a big deal? Do you not need to write anymore? Oh, we lost Alex. He just hung up. I said that.
Well, you know something.
That's it. I'm done.
What my first thought was, I thought, well, if I was a third grade teacher, which I'm not, but if I was, what would I use an iPad for? And the very first thing came to my mind, even before, you know, cameras and scientific experiments and all this kind of stuff, was, wow, what a great tool for teaching handwriting.
Isn't it better? I mean, don't you need to do it on paper with a pencil?
Yeah, I'm thinking, so I don't know anything about this really, right? But just think about it. A lot of how kids learn to handwrite when they're very young is they do tracing, right?
Be good
Which
for
is
that.
Really boring. Right. But I think you could make an app, and I bet there are apps for tracing that would make it so much more fun.
All right. You're right. Because that's an issue with the younger kids, especially younger boys, is fine motor skills. Yeah, so you give them a pencil and you give them something engaging and fun, at least they're going to develop their motor muscles. And that'll help them. I think ultimately, if it's penmanship you need, I don't know if, frankly,
Right.
I don't know if people are going to be doing a lot of handwriting in the year 2525. But
you still need to be able to write your numbers. And I remember with our son, he moved to the typewriter pretty quickly because you didn't have to write. But for instance, we would go to the local food co-op and you have to like write the bin numbers on your dried nuts, whatnot, right? And we'd be like, look, kid, you know, you can't.
That's
you
a
can't
very
buy
good point.
The peanuts if the cashier can't tell whether it's a 7 or a 1.
You can't buy whole grains at Whole Foods if you can't write the number on the twist tie.
Yeah. I mean, there's.
And if a kid says, but I don't have a stylus and a tablet, please.
Take a picture, pick a photo with your iPad.
Well, I mean, if it is true that if you look at how teenagers and even younger kids are communicating, it's very visual. It's very much photography. There, but we got Alex back.
Sorry about that.
They absolutely have to be able to think, and they have to be able to connect ideas together, and they have to be able to like run this stuff through their bodies and their minds and analyze it and come up with, ideas that make sense. And writing, I believe, the kind of writing where a keyboard is really very helpful, really facilitates that process for a lot of people, even if it is painful and slow and difficult. And yeah, it was a disappointment to me that Apple did not include the smart keyboard connector onto the new iPads. I know you can attach a Bluetooth keyboard and that works well enough, but it's also like just one more thing that you have to keep connected, and the smart keyboards really are superior, in my opinion. So.
I feel bad for the kid now who has to remember to not only charge the iPad, but has to charge the keyboard and has to charge the pencil and gets to class and it's all dead. And by the way, your kid's now in college, but I know kids younger than that, the last thing they do is plug in their devices at the end of the day.
Oh, I don't know. I will say that my kids are 8 and 10, and they are consciously conscious of their battery.
They are very unusual, Alex.
The funny thing is, when my daughter was three, she would walk up to her little, almost three, she would walk up to me, and she'd take the iPad and she'd show it to me, and she'd go, "Apanicha, apanicha." And I couldn't, it took me a long time to realize that she was trying to say the iPad needs charge.
Your kids are very sophisticated.
Well, and they know where it is. A lot of where they sit in the house is where the charger is.
Yeah.
So I think they also play a lot of things. They do a lot of things with the iPad that are very processor intensive. So it doesn't last very long if they don't do that.
That every time I see my college kid's son, he actually just graduated, and my daughter, the very first question they ask, and their friends too, when they come over, you got a charger I can use? Inevitably. Inevitably.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're walking around with 10% charge all the time.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times what you're doing with these social networks, though, is also driving the battery. You know, you won't last very long. You can, you get maybe a half a day if you're spending a lot of time on Facebook. I think that's part of the problem.
So you were gone, Alex, but I was asking the question, and I think Tanya and I agree on this, that Apple's, mentioning all these creative things you could do with an iPad, but the one thing it's not great at is writing.
Well, I think that the iPads that we have keyboards, and so I don't remember which one we got, but it's a nice little keyboard. It's not the Apple one; it's a bigger, thicker keyboard. I think it's Logi or whatever. So I don't think it's Logitech's, but
they're Bluetooth, right? Or you're not using the smart connector.
It's not using the smart connector.
One
of the things that I think is interesting, and what I think is really important, is that if kids are using the keyboards, it has to come very quickly with typing lessons and typing classes. One of the things that I'm kind of crippled, I will admit, I mean, I can bang out 40, 50 words a minute, but it's with like three, these fingers. Like, I don't do touch typing. I don't know how to do that. And when you compare that, I mean, it's because I started programming when I was 9 and I didn't have any typing lessons until I was 14. And by then I just could never go back to, I would take the typing lessons in school and then I would go home and program. so it was, I didn't have time to try to do touch typing. So I never really, now it's all muscle memory. I can type pretty fast, but it's only with half of my digits. When I watch my kids, what I'm afraid of is they, they're sitting there talking to, you know, other kids on, you know, Roblox or whatever. And they are, you know, going through that, but they're just typing with a couple fingers. And I'm afraid that giving them the keyboard without giving them that class and making sure that they can use it effectively means that forever they're never going to be as fast. I think that handwriting is probably, I barely handwrite at this point. So, I mean, I don't know why I would expect my kids to handwrite more than I do, which is maybe a couple times. I mean, I only write in caps now. I don't do cursive. I don't do lowercase. it's like this thing that I have to do.
I am looking. There are typing tutors for the iPad.
There are. I'm just saying that the school gives kids typewriters. They have to.
I think
it's really important that comes with something. And I do think that that's one problem with the iPad is that you won't use it on the glass. You really want to be able to type on something. But I do think that. I think it's important for them to do. I think that, you know, a lot of their content is going to be created over time with voice and, you know, a lot of other things. But I do, I have a feeling that as my kids get to high school, there's a high probability that they'll use the keyboard to correct what they wrote, what they said. I do think that typing is a different thing than speaking, though. I mean, you know, I've done a lot of dictation and a lot of typing, and the voice that I dictate with is different than the voice that I write with. Literally, my hands are a different personality than my voice, and so it's just an interesting. It's definitely using a different part of my brain or a different way that I look at things when I'm speaking versus when I'm typing. It's interesting.
Let's take a little break, and Andy Anacco will join us in a little bit. He was at the event. He'll give us a little perspective on what it was like to be. There, Adam, I'm sorry, I almost called you Adam Engst. Tanya Engst is here. It's great to have you. I see all those running numbers behind you, all the races you've run in, all the medals over your right shoulder.
Oh, yeah. Having a good time.
Thank you for taking a little time off the road to join us today. She's at tidbits.com. You sold the Take Control titles about a year ago.
That's correct.
So congratulations.
Sold them to Joe Kissel. He was one of our main authors. And he has just taken right over. It's been great.
That's nice. And it gives you a little more free time. Are you working more on Tidbits? Or
I'm helping out behind the scenes with Tidbits. We're doing a major infrastructure project right now, actually.
When is that launching?
Probably later this week. We will have a brand new Tidbits website. Every last bit of the infrastructure, the mailing list, the way we accept advertising, every single little last thing is going to be redone. We are so excited. And of course, part of why we had time to focus on that was that Joe Kissel is now running the Take Control books, and that gave us a lot more time to focus on our core website. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Very exciting.
Not that your website isn't great. But it does look like it might harken back to an earlier day.
Yeah, and that's not even the first redo of the poor thing, because we started so long ago, we had to convert it to the web to begin with.
That's right. You weren't on the web at all in the beginning. The longest running Macintosh newsletter, 27 years and counting, and a must subscribe. In fact, I'm a Tidbits member. Everybody should be a Tidbits member because... it really is an important resource for the Apple community. But I do notice, for instance, Tanya, when I zoom in a little bit, stuff starts to disappear. You need mobile.
Yeah.
We need mobile responsive design in here. That's coming. I know. Next.
Luckily, that was definitely on our checklist. So I'm not telling you
how
now.
Exciting.
Oh, we'll get to that the next time.
But it's going to stay purple, right?
Yeah, we're going to still have a kind of a purple, a little bit of a purple aspect.
Good.
Yeah.
Very important.
Very excited.
And you see all the typing that goes on here? If it weren't for typing, we wouldn't have Tidbits. You're not going to Even I'm more with Serenity, who can actually draw really well, doesn't do a whole lot of cartoony articles. In fact, only one to my memory. That's great to have you, Tanya. I know, where she talks about the pencil, right, and all the things you can do with an iPad Pro.
It's beautiful. I actually, people ask me whether they should get the Apple Pencil, what it's good for, and I actually send them the URL to the article by Serenity because it just totally wraps it.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
The Apple Pencil drawn review of the Apple Pencil.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to be getting a lot of in the future when kids just use iPads in school. Everything's going to look like this.
That's right.
Well, I think there'll be a lot more pictures.
As the mother of a Cornell University freshman right
oh,
now.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
It's actually really just like, what will they take for their college essay? If they'll take an essay written with the Apple Pencil that looks like that, great. But if not...
Yeah, then you got a problem. Then you got a problem.
Start your engines now, folks. Only 10 years to get your child able to coherently write a couple of those essays. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that the one thing that I think that the iPads do make easier, and I think it's really important, is that kids get a lot better at using visual media. So whether it's, you know, making little movies, making pictures, making, you know, doing design and layout, you know, of all of those things are very important in the real world. I have gotten things done because I can build a reasonably good Keynote deck. So, you know, that those are, you know, being able to put all those pieces together and being able to tie that together, I think, is something that is going to be very, very important in the future from a communications perspective and getting jobs and all the other bits and pieces.
And I don't want to deprecate the, you know, ability to create graphics and video and use Keynote. All of those things will be important too. You need it all.
Yep.
Yeah, and I don't want to deprecate that. In fact, one of the jokes that we make at Tidbits is we are very text heavy, and we have very slowly been getting more comfortable and more agile with the graphics and the video and all that. But I think that the era that we were educated in, which would have been, you know, we got graduated from college in the late 1980s. That era of education definitely prepared us for a certain future, which of course we're not particularly living in. But I do support kids being able to express themselves with, you know, beyond just typing. Yeah. Absolutely. It's very important.
Well, that takes us to our first sponsor, Active Campaign. If you want to reach out to customers and clients, it's nice to have graphics, but you need more than just, you know, a pretty picture or a mass email. You need something targeted directly to that person's interests and needs. If you have a growing business and you want to close more sales, you got to check out Active Campaign. Much more than marketing automation, you get the right type of message to the right person at the right time, and they've got the tools to help you do it. No more, you know, spam blast emails with, you know, the same message to everybody on your mailing list. With the smart tools available at Active Campaign, this is kind of, in fact, impressive. You can show different content in your messages depending on contact information, interactions, social data, interests. The messages are personalized, and they are not just personalized in email, on your website, when they visit your website, or on their mobile device when they're out and about. You'll design eye-catching campaigns with their drag-and-drop campaign builder and maximize engagement with something we used to call A-B testing, but they call it split testing because it's not just A and B, it's A, B, C, D, and E. It's up to five version split testing. So you find the exact content and layout and settings that your subscribers respond to. No more guessing. You'll know what works with Active Campaign. Multi-user editing means everybody, you know, you can have multiple people working on the same deck. You got a revision history capability, integrations with lots of other tools, conditional content, geo-tracking, site tracking, social sharing, integration with Google Analytics, and on and on and on. And, of course, it looks great on mobile. And with every Active Campaign subscription, image hosting is free. You want to identify, nurture, convert, and retain more customers, you need Active Campaign. And we've got a really great deal for you. If you go to activecampaign.com/twit, a 2-week trial free, but also you get the second month free. You also get 2 free one-on-ones with their platform consultants. You also get free migration from whatever pathetic little tool you're using today. That pathetic little tool. ActiveCampaign.com/twit. ActiveCampaign.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of Twit. So we're learning new information now from The Verge, because they got to play with Apple's, rather Logitech's, new keyboard that is designed for education and will not be available to you, but only, in fact, to education through Apple's education store.
I don't quite get that.
Well, it's cheap. It's $89. They also have a $49 crayon, but this is why you probably don't want it. Look at the size of this thing. It is massive. Logitech says it can survive a 4-foot drop. a huge plastic brick around the iPad. And interestingly, it isn't a Bluetooth keyboard because the case plugs into the Lightning port, and then that controls the keyboard. It's a special smart connector, as you can see right here, that Logitech developed. So this is a rugged case. This is a big, rugged case. Won't be available till later this summer. And this is what they intend for school. It is a chiclet keyboard, though. Look at that. That does not look very attractive. And I feel bad for anybody who has to write a school paper on it. But this is obviously what you need if you're going to have expensive iPads in the school. Hey, look who's here. Looky here. Thank you, Andy Iannocco, for heading back to your hotel room. He's just off his visit to high school. How was it going back to school, Andy?
Oh, Tim Cook did stuff me into a locker, but, you know, he is the alpha jock on the campus. He was entitled to do that. I'm not joking. If you thought that they were going to simply put up a huge white tent in the parking lot, no. They took out the entire high school. You literally had to go to classrooms for, like, briefings and for the demo area and for demos of what the IT side of it is like and what the creative side of it is like. And, yes, it was like having that dream all over again where, oh, my God, I'm back in high school and I haven't gone to any of my classes and I don't know where my classes are or what classes I'm taking. But it was a pretty special event.
At least you weren't this naked, Andy. Now, where were the students at Lane Tech? Were they all staying home that day?
I don't know. Maybe they gave them each 25 cents to go to the movies for 3 hours or so. Because I didn't see any.
There were no kids, any of them. Huh? Wow.
They brought in. Now they had like hundreds, what seemed like hundreds of like concierges, like in beautiful like Green Bay Packers color. It must be the school colors of the high school. Apple like down jackets with the Apple yellow Apple logo and the green and the green body. And these were like actual like people who worked at Apple stores from like all over the country. So they're all really, really happy and really, really friendly. It was a school day. It was a real school day.
Wow.
Getting back to that Logitech keyboard, it really does go to show you that this is, it's almost like developing something for the military when you, as opposed to developing something for consumers. The reason why it connects through that Lightning connector and not through Wi-Fi is because school districts are concerned about cheating. So what happens if you have an open wireless network or an ability to do a point-to-point communication? It's the same reason why iPad has a problem in school districts that demand keyboards attached to their computers they buy for schools. Again, you could say, "Oh, we'll just buy a $20 Bluetooth keyboard." No, no, you can't. You can't do that because, again, in testing, they're worried about if they have open Bluetooth.
Kids, so that's one of the features of the new Class Kit, is it can put it in a test mode, a kiosk mode, and I bet you disable Bluetooth when it does that. So that keyboard wouldn't work if it were a Bluetooth keyboard.
One of the last things I attended was an IT demo of really having full control from not just the IT department's dashboard, but from the teacher's dashboard. They can lock out specific students of the whole classroom or groups by saying that, okay, now we're going to the Safari app and I'm opening a page in your devices and everything else is locked down. And they're going through a script, and I did have somebody, I think, looking at me a lot more closely when they saw that I was deliberately saying, oh, so you're saying that the kid can't get out of this mode. So I was doing things like holding down the home key like for 10 seconds. I tried to power it down, and I was able to make it go to sleep. I was able to bring up accessibility controls, but otherwise I couldn't make it do anything that the teacher didn't want it to do at that moment. So they really thought a lot about this.
So we have already talked, as you might imagine, Andy, as you've been making your way back to your hotel, we had some time to talk about what we thought and so forth. You were there. You saw it. Tell us your thoughts.
I was really pleased by everything that I saw today. What I was looking forward to is, apart from, you know, new announcements and demos, it's that subtle question of, are we seeing evidence that Apple cares about this market? And it was just an hour and a half of we feel as though this is what they're explicitly saying, but the feeling I got was this is them saying that we feel as though a core part of this company is education, And we are trying, we are really, really eager to make sure that we are as competitive with any other thing that's out there. And I was in preparation for this, I was talking to a lot of friends of mine and contacts that are usually the smart people I talk to when I need to learn about computers and education. And they gave me a whole list of reasons why either they personally didn't want to use iPads in their classrooms, or reasons why they had tried to tried to convince their school districts to use something else, but failed. And really, it went boom, 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 boom. They went all the way down that list, from an actually affordable device to administration tools to security tools. They really, really hit everything. Now, whether it's going to be a business success, that's not my bailiwick. But I really thought this is a great product, and I'm really, really excited about what they're doing with education.
They didn't drop the price at all. They just added capabilities. This is the same $299 to education that the previous iPad, fifth generation, was.
And it really is for anybody, even for the blistering $329 for the consumer version of it. I got to use one for about 10 or 15 minutes. It feels like a regular iPad. I use a large iPad Pro almost every day. And again, I was zooming in, zooming out. I was trying to stress the CPU. It didn't feel like Apple's least expensive computer in the lineup. It felt like a real iPad. I think that there are a lot of people that might have wanted an iPad in their personal lineup, who might have had a budget for a Chromebook or a cheap Windows book, but something with that kind of CPU and plus full Apple Pencil support, not stripped down Apple Pencil support, but full Apple Pencil support, that really does seem like a great price for an inexpensive computer, for finally an economically accessible computer.
It's a generation old processor, the A10 Fusion, not the A11 that's in the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10 and the iPad Pros. But they did say it's faster than a Chromebook or most Chromebooks out there. Is speed really an issue in education? Is that one of the points your educators checked off?
Not really, but it's really important for what they're trying to sell. They are trying to make the point that this is not a Chromebook. This is an iPad. This is something that has a different mission statement than a simple Chromebook. It's not there to just give you reading, writing, spreadsheets, and writing papers and test prep. This is for creativity. And so if they are really going to say that you can record and produce iMovies on this, if they're really going to say that you can draw and write and paint with it, you can do AR with it, it has to be a top drawer experience. And because it's that with the A10, that means it's about as fast as an iPhone 7, that really does put it up there.
Now, it's not inexpensive, especially when you consider you have to pay the education price of $89 for the pencil if you want to take advantage of the pencil.
Yeah.
That is more than many Chromebooks. Is that price still acceptable to your friends in education?
It's in the ballpark. It's a really complex answer that people were giving me last week. One of them is that they love to see hardware that's less than $200 that isn't crap. So that's maybe it's well within the margin of what they think is tolerable, particularly if they can make the case that this is going to be a durable thing that's not going to fall apart, have keys flipping off of it, and the uptime is going to be very, very good. On the other hand, the only major thing that I think they left unaddressed is that it still can only be an iPad. And this vision of how you can teach lessons with the iPad, as opposed to simply having any other generic computer, was very compelling and very, and at points, inspirational. But one of the problems is that, it still can only be an iPad. Whereas when you get a Chromebook, you can really make it into whatever you want. When your lesson plans change, when your whole idea of when you've got 300 that you're moving from one school district to another school district because they have a whole different set of needs, it's a little bit more flexible. But it's super competitive. This, I really do think, it's a very competitive mode. It's expensive, but it's not cheap. It's inexpensive, but it's not cheaply made.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that Apple should do, we'll see what they do. They generally don't do what I'm about to say, which is that they should spur the market on by a lot of investment in content. But having a lot of really, really high-end content for specific subjects that are exclusive to this ecosystem, I think could also be something as people are making those decisions. I mean, it would have to be you know, it's not like a couple little tchotchkes, but some really good AR, some you know, continuing to build those tools. And they've shown some of these tools here, but really pushing the content end of things, that there's a curriculum that people can kind of work into, so that, you know, all things are not even. You're buying into a curriculum as well as buying into that. And there's a lot of complexities with that. And so I wouldn't say curriculum. I would say a lot of additions, really cool math things or really cool science things that they can show off. And they should seed companies to do that. And if they really want to take this market, I mean, they should open up the purse and start to, you know, dole out, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, when people want to land in this area, that they should, hundreds of millions of dollars or $1 billion or $2 billion in educational content that may not be, again, the curriculum world goes very slowly. You know, you start in Florida and you get them to approve it. Or literally, you start in Florida. And then you kind of work your way through the systems, and that could take a decade. But lots and lots of extra tools that make science interesting, make art interesting, you know, all of these things that they're showing off, but they need 10 of those in every vertical. And it's only if it's technologically driven, it's got tons of AR, tons of video, tons of interactivity, and then it drives those as things you could use in the classroom. I think that puts a lot more pressure on schools who are saying, well, you know, the parents will be like, well, I want that, or some of the school districts will say, well, we can't have that if we don't, you know, if we don't have that content. And especially if it's taking advantage of the pencil and taking advantage of things that would be hard to do on any other platform.
I like the position that they seem to be taking, because when you have content and curriculums that are specifically designed to take advantage for the iPad, that is wonderful, but that's non-portable. That means that this school system is now locked into having this hardware and supporting this hardware, or else they're going to have to adapt to an entirely new course curricula. What they seem to be making the point during the presentation that there's not supposed to be a moment of, okay, class, now take out your iPads. It's supposed to be a moment of, we are doing our math unit, that using whatever curriculum and whatever sources are approved and used by our school system, but we're using the kids can now use the iPads to sort of enhance their understanding about it. Just like they're doing, they already had a course curriculum on coding. Now they have a course curriculum on creating. They're going to be showing that off for the first time at the Big Apple store here in Chicago later tonight. And that's one of the things that they wanted to make a point of, that you can teach social studies, but rather than simply use a keyboard and a screen to write a report or to read web content that's been prepared, how about you actually create an iMovie and annotate and animate and narrate an iMovie about this subject to show off what you know? So that's what they're trying to get at.
No, I think that's great. And just to correct, I didn't want to say that this curriculum that they're locked into, but lots of extras. So what you're talking about,
right?
But even, you know, math extras and everything else, things that wrap around that curriculum. So they might still end up using Google Classroom for the core, using the things that are already available to the school. But then, there's all these extra tools and extra content that could be used that may be very driven towards the iPad. And of course that does create some reasons. It wouldn't lock you into the curriculum as much as there'd just be a lot of bells and whistles that you wouldn't have if you didn't have it. Right. And then that leads you to that. The good thing for schools there is that a lot of 50% of the schools are already using Google, Google Classroom. So they could use both together, but they might lean towards the Apple hardware while still using the Google Classroom, you know, which would let Apple start to kind of edge their way into that process.
Well, that's another thing Apple announced, of course, is a competitor to Classroom, which is, you know, something Apple really needed to do. This is called Schoolwork. It's an app for education, integrates with ClassKit, which lets third-party developers add their, you know, app to the schoolwork tracking. What do you think of Schoolwork? Did you get to play with it or find out more about it?
I didn't get to play with it myself, but I love the idea of having this ClassKit API. Because part of it is not, if you are used to education with laptops, where a lot of it is, okay, class, now follow along with teacher and what you see presented on the screen, you can have, let's say that there's like a math lab sort of app. If that app supports ClassKit, the teacher's console, the teacher's iPad can actually not just simply say, okay, class, now open up the math app and follow along with me. ClassKit APIs will let the teacher actually take over all of these apps to do a specific thing and run through a specific lesson plan. And that's going to, like ARKit, that's going to be really cool to see how educators and how developers decide to support that in 6 to 10 months.
Really, ultimately, all of this comes down to what teachers can and want to do with it. If you have a teacher that's inspired and excited and decides to, you know, start using all these apps and start building curriculum or using existing curriculum, who really pays attention to this, who's really motivated to do it, this could be an amazing thing. But I also know that teachers are often overwhelmed. They don't have the resources that they'd like. They're in challenging environments. You know, if even in one school, it could vary from classroom to classroom. How this is used.
One of the things that I would say is, go ahead, Alex.
Go ahead, Andy.
No.
Okay. So one of the things that I think is important is to look for teachers that are interested in doing this and finding ways to do everything you can to support. And they've already talked about this, having ambassadors that are going to come to the schools and work with them. But they need to think about a way to do that ongoingly. So, and this could be literally live classrooms for the teachers that want to teach, you know, with their product. But really stepping out and getting their arms around helping teachers that are interested. Because a lot of times what you end up with is a teacher or a handful of teachers in a given school system that are thinking, you know, outside the box. I had a friend of mine, he is in the Baltimore School District, actually a principal now, but a few years ago was a teacher in the Baltimore School District, and the Baltimore School District has smart boards, and no one was using them. Like, you know, they sometimes use projection, but they never touch it. She started building a whole bunch of stuff around them because she was interested in that. And what ended up happening is a lot more people started doing it because they saw what she was able to create. And so I think that's an example of someone who just one teacher stepping out and then having it have a ripple effect. Finding those teachers and finding ways to really do absolutely everything you can to support them is going to be one of the key factors of Apple being able to do that. They have ambassadors, but they need to think about ways that they can literally support them every day. Like, how do you have them, like, they can send you a private form for a handful of seed teachers where they're going to be able to give you, you know, feedback and show you examples. And those are the kind of things that I think Apple has to do if they really want to move into this market.
Tanya, I saw you nodding. I mean, we love teachers. And I know that there are teachers who are inspired by the opportunity that this presents, but I also know teachers who are overwhelmed by the opportunity it presents.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get everyone on that entire gamut. You're going to get the teacher who would be all over any kind of program Apple could offer, but even without the program, they're going to do great stuff. And then you've got teachers who are like, well, I just figured out my entire curriculum and it's not that overwhelmed, or teachers whose technology skills are still coming online. And for them, you know, maybe just checking their email once a week is pretty awesome. So yes, all of the above. If Apple wants this to happen, I completely agree. The more support that they can provide as far as examples and support and everything, excellent. It's all good. Not sure what else to say. I mean, unless they want to actually, have little mini Apple stores in the local high school.
Well, in some ways, it might be possible to get people more inspired by Apple and how, you know, I mean, I think Apple's more inspiring than Google Chromebooks are. I mean, you know, if nothing else, they have beautiful ads and pretty pictures, and you can look at it and go, boy, that would really be great. And you don't really see that kind of thing going on the Google side. It's a little more pedestrian and mundane. On the other hand, teachers often don't get the choice of what they want to do and implement. I just know that from my own experience working with teachers in the high school, some teachers took to whatever technology they were given and really made it sing. And some teachers were so phobic or sometimes even anti-technology that it didn't matter what you put in their hands, it wasn't going to make a difference. Somebody in the chat room, thank you, I don't have your name, put the UNESCO Education, Research, and Foresight Working Papers, The Future of Learning. This is from a few years ago, talking about for one thing, students are now, they said, going to be active learners. They're going to be much more engaged in their education. I think that's the kind of thing that an iPad in a kid's hand could make a big difference, because kids, like teachers, get inspired by the technology that they have in their hands, and an iPad is much more inspiring. But they also talk about how teachers are going to have to change their role. They say teachers have to evolve into creative workers, jointly constructing knowledge with learners in the classroom. And so this is, in some ways, if Apple's vision is to come true, it's going to require teachers kind of embracing it and embracing a new role somewhat.
I think that Apple has to take a more aggressive view of this than if they're serious about it. A lot of times Apple releases stuff and then goes, and then people will, of course, flock to it. And they'll be happy.
We know that. Silicon Valley problem.
Right. But it isn't. Yeah. I will say I don't think that's the way Google approached it. I think Google approached the classrooms with a lot of focus, you know, and so there's a lot of outreach. There was a lot of support. There was a lot of Google definitely, put their back into it when it comes to doing that.
This is going to require meaningful professional development and lots of support. It's a significant undertaking. Teachers will need new forms of professional development to support them if they're going to meet the needs of 21st century learners.
Well, Apple's definitely in that. They've got so many former teachers working on the inside too, and they don't feel like the ones that I've talked to, in addition to the ones I've talked to today, you get the feeling that they feel like they're still working as elementary school teachers. They're just helping kids through Apple and helping a larger classroom of kids by making these products and services better. There is a great deal of outreach. Today they even showed off something that's been around for a while, the Apple Teacher Program, which is kind of like a social network, Apple social network for teachers. It really is like having an Apple Watch where if you don't know how to set up iMovie, if you don't know how to add to edit audio, this is not a courseware for kids. This is courseware for teachers who want to learn how to integrate this stuff into their iPads and into their lessons. And so you actually get, just like on the Apple Watch, you get a sticker, you get a badge for achievements. They said they're about to award their 1,000,000th badge for achievements on the Apple network here. So they're definitely they're not just putting it out there and hoping people come to buy it. This has been a super interactive process, and again, it's just good to see. Whereas every time they have a Mac announcement, it's like, we love the Mac, and to show that, here's a demo of a new feature we're adding to Mail sometime in the next few months. This isn't what was happening today. This was, if we want to make sure you know that we love you, we want to make sure that it's not just something we're saying, it's something that we're actually doing, and here are physical, actual, tangible results of all the work that we've been doing.
Apple has created some new curriculum for teachers called Everyone Can Create.
Create, yeah.
Towards this goal. And they showed this off as well at the school. Yeah, I think this is an opportunity for it's a great opportunity for Apple to take some leadership and step forward and say, we understand the needs of 21st century learners and 21st century teachers, and we're here to help teachers. That would be welcome. And like, as you said, Alex, I would love to see Apple put some money into this. They've got plenty of cash. If they really are committed to this, it's going to be more than just releasing another iPad with pencil support. It's got to be really about helping teachers reinvent the classroom.
I do think they're doing that through the services and the software that they're making. Whether it comes down to actual monetary investment and actually creating content, I don't know. And my intimate knowledge of what teachers require in education is only through the wonderful people who've tried to help me become less ignorant. But it's so hard to create outside of simply giving people grant money to go off and do whatever they need to do, it's hard for them to make an impact on a national and international scale, because the needs of each school district is different, let alone the needs of each school system.
I'll give you an example, though, and it sounds like they're kind of doing this. You've got these Apple stores. You've got an opportunity in these Apple stores that you're already doing it to do all sorts of really great learning events. Spend a significant portion of the time that you spend in the Apple Store teaching teachers, showing teachers what they could do, supporting teachers. That's one way they could do it that wouldn't, it would just be a fine tuning of what they're already doing.
Well, and I think a lot of those stores actually have private classrooms for that as well. Good. So there's more to those Apple stores typically than than just what's out in front. So there's definitely some opportunities to do that. And you know, Apple can also do a tour. I mean, they do tours in other areas where, you know, for developers and so on and so forth, go to a hotel room, you know, get 400 teachers and have a, you know, conversation, or better yet, do some of it online. There's this thing called HLS live streaming, I think, that Apple has something to do with.
I do think I do think they're doing it. It's just not a public-facing feature that anybody can just jump into. Right. So I think they're doing a good job. Anyone can always do a better job. But I did, after people I've been talking to today and also a little bit earlier, the education for teachers resources are very, very good. It's just that before, they didn't have a whole lot of firepower with which to come to the purchasing people at the schools and say, here is why we're not going to get Chromebooks. Here's why I'm going to make the case for making iPads.
I hope this is the visible tip of a massive iceberg of support for education. It sure looked that way when Tim Cook took the stage this morning. I mean, it was clear Apple feels strongly about education, and I don't feel like it was lip service, you know, in service of them making more money on the education market. But there's always that feeling. Ryder in the chat room says that it's going to be tough for Apple because educators already feel burned by the early iPad hype around education. I think to like the LA school district, which bought tens of millions of dollars of iPads and now is suing Apple and Pearson because there wasn't the curriculum, there wasn't the support. It really did not work out for them, and they lost a lot of money on that.
Yeah.
And I think that feeling in the air is going to be something Apple also has to counter.
Yeah, it was a similar situation to the Maine iPad buying program. The state of Maine invested very, very heavily. And I think part of it was because they were selling the iPad as a content, as a container for curriculum and content, as opposed to this is the new Blackboard. This is the new composition book. This is something that you can use to teach whatever the thing is you want to teach. And even if you want to send people into the woods to look for bugs, now we're saying, why don't you use the camera on the iPad to take pictures of these bugs? And why don't you use iMovie to make a movie about what you've learned about bugs?
Yeah.
It's a strong move.
Yeah.
Let's also point out that I love the fact that there's a $329 computer for consumers that I think is quite competitive with what you could get for less than $400 on the Windows side of it. Doesn't do it with everything that a regular notebook would do, but it's a wonderful package. And I've always thought that the thing that really disappointed me about Apple is they don't visibly seem to care about people who don't have a whole lot of money to spend, but now they're really delivering a lot of value. And well, what do you know? All it took was having serious competition and a customer base that was able to make their own free choices of whether to go with Chromebooks or iPads. And I think that if you are enjoying as a regular consumer the $329 new iPad, thank the education market for forcing Apple to finally say, well, you know what? Maybe we can make a superior computer for amount of money that most people can afford.
I have to say, you know, I think my general inclination is that schools should not support closed proprietary platforms, that schools should be all about open software, open platforms, that is ultimately the best for society. And picking a winner in a big corporation is just not the role of public schools anyway. So I am kind of, I hate to say it, here we are on Mac Break Weekly. I'm not exactly sanguine about Apple's foray into education. I think they could show us a lot of cool and interesting things that can be done. That's great. And then I think the open community needs to take it over and push it forward. That's a political point of view. Go ahead, Tanya.
We need a nonprofit. We would need a nonprofit to support that initiative in a very strong way. I mean, Apple does put a lot of muscle behind this. I think that's an interesting idea to talk more about or to think more about. But it seems like the first thing that it would need, practically speaking, is some kind of nonprofit that really wanted to take that on in a big way.
The problem with open is it's fragmented. It doesn't have the power of a single $1 trillion company pushing it.
Yeah.
But it has many, many smaller companies that are actively interested. They're very interested. And I feel like that's...
Yeah, but for a school district, they're not going to have the resources to sort out a whole bunch of small companies and what to use and how to integrate it.
They used Moodle, which was an open source classroom. It didn't turn
out. That's only because they didn't have anything better. I mean, Moodle was horrible.
Yeah, it was horrible.
I tried it. I mean, I was very excited. I was like, I'm going to use Moodle for some of the education stuff we were doing. And it was disaster. Like, it was so bad. And I have to admit that Moodle is the reason that I would disagree with you is that it as this kind of open thing, it was, you know, there's a lot of people that use it and it's just gruel. I mean, and the problem is that what I care about more than anything else is my kids learning efficiently. Like, we can talk about whether they should learn about open platforms and we can talk about all those things. And I do want them to learn how to do bits and pieces of that. I have them building their own little computers and, you know, we're teaching them how to use, you know, like literally like those little Piper ones where they have to put it all together and they hack through all of those things. So it's not, you know, I definitely want them to be self-sufficient in that area. But when it comes to school, I want them to get through their schoolwork as fast as possible.
I know, but for the same reason, I'm not a fan of for-profit education. I'm not a fan of for-profit education entities. I think Pearson's profit motive clearly is bad for education. I think you could argue the same for, you know, the thing that is interesting is that Google does seem to have that kind of open source, open mentality. For instance, Classroom works on every platform. I can guarantee you Apple's schoolwork is not going to work on anything but Apple.
But I think the challenge that Google have, and I don't think it'll be a challenge. I think Google will be fine with this because I don't think Apple is going to push hard enough to make this work. But if Apple decided that they really wanted to push down this path and they really wanted to make it a great experience, it would be very hard for Google across all the platforms to compete with the quality of experience that you'd have on the iPad. So that, you know, if Apple decided they really wanted to push down that path, it's just too hard to do what they're doing. The advantage of that closed market is that it's you have less variables to manage every time you create a new piece of content or a new tool, and so that's the hard part. And now the advantage that the Google has is Apple. You know, I mean, they made a nice announcement and everything looks pretty, and you know, I'm sure everybody clapped, and they'll probably put some money into it, but I don't think that they're going to do what would be necessary to really, you know, really take on this market. If they did, it would be very hard to compete with, because in the end, the educators that are going to make those choices are going to look at that content. They're going to look at the overall experience of the student. They're not going to talk about open networks or anything else. I mean, some of them, a handful of them will. But the bottom line is if kids are enjoying it, if kids are more engaged because it's more fun, because it's really cool tools, you know, to me, they're learning more. And then then they're going to move on to something else. You know, I think more about the efficiency of the knowledge acquisition than anything else.
This is I don't know how this has survived the tenure of Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education, but tech.ed.gov, the Office of Educational Technology, U.S. Government Department of Education, go open. Why use openly licensed educational resources? Resources that are openly licensed benefit schools in a number of ways, but most notably, they help to increase equity, keep content relevant and high quality, empower teachers, and save money. This is exactly the opposite of what Apple is promoting. And I have to, it's a political point of view probably as much as anything else, but I agree with it. So,
well,
having said that, let's get back to the iPad adulation. Go ahead, Andy.
No, I'm just, it's, I don't think that this is, I think this really is a situation where Apple can't, we forget that the Mac has way less than 10% of the desktop market, like something like 8.3%, 8.4%, and so but they're very, very successful in selling a solution to people that are eager to have the sort of experience that the Macintosh provides. So I certainly don't think that they are going to have the same supremacy that they once had in education, but at least it's going to be a very, very credible and very, very vibrant pocket dimension, so to speak, for all these people to work in. So all the problems that you're mentioning are absolutely valid, and there's stuff that I keep hearing time and time again that they really do need a container. People, IT people really want, and educators by large they really, really want a container that they can adapt and put things into, and they don't like getting the answer back that, oh, well, this doesn't do that, and you'd have to wait for the company to want to make that change in order for you to be able to do that. But there are going to be plenty of school systems that maybe they have been able to reinvent themselves from the ground up. Maybe they have a brand new superintendent. Maybe they have I have to say this, but it's absolutely true. Maybe they have a demographic shift that means that it's a much wealthier school district, and now they have the ability to reinvent classrooms and take the asbestos off the hot water pipes, you know, simple things like that. And that really is part of the dimension of what we're looking at. We have classes that have asbestos on hot water pipes that they feel that they've been told that so long as they don't rip them down, it's okay where it is, and they don't have the money to properly get the asbestos out of classrooms or upgrade the heating system or anything like that. So Apple, I don't think they can still make a solution for those school districts, and that's really, really too bad. I hope that they do create open source, open software that people can run on a Chromebook, that people can run on a Raspberry Pi. That would be such an amazing thing for Apple to do, but I'm not willing. But it's okay for me to say that so long as some kids find their voices, find their passion, so long as they find a connection to knowledge and learning that would not have been there if the school district were still using a static page or even still using a keyboard and a mouse, I'm certainly all for it.
All right, let's take a little break. We'll have more. Tanya Engst is here from tidbits.com. Wonderful to have you, Tanya. Thank you for being here. For Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps. And we got Andy Iannocco to head over to his hotel. Now, Andy, I don't know if this is a sensitive topic or not. Do you mind if I bring this up?
Okay, well, I mean, I just find a kilt a lot more comfortable in this. My movement is freer.
I know, Andy, but going commando is just not okay.
I didn't say I was going commando. I wear something underneath there.
No, I'm talking about the Chicago.
This is the Windy City, you know.
I'm talking about the Chicago Sun-Times, which Andy has been with. You said 17 years. That's a long time.
I think I started with him in 1999, actually 2000.
That's great. Now it's the CWOB.com, although I'm glad to say you posted on Facebook. It was the one reason I was glad I undeleted my deleted Facebook pages. I found out what was going on with Andy, that you are still at this event and covering it for another publication, and that your future lies elsewhere, I guess is what we're saying.
Yeah, I mean, the coverage that I was planning on writing for the Sun-Times as of Thursday last week is going to be in Fast Company tomorrow.
Oh, great.
So look for it in fastcompany.com. I'm going to be fine. As I was so flattered and even a little bit humbled by all the concern and well wishes that I was getting, because the news came down on Friday. I want to make sure because there's so many people, companies that tend to send me things without me asking for them because I'm a newspaper columnist, want to make sure the word got out really, really quickly. And I had to really reassure a lot of people that, you know, I enjoyed my tenure with the Sun-Times. I was honored beyond measure to be a columnist for the newspaper that was Roger Ebert's newspaper, for instance. But it's been a while since they were my primary source of income. They were I was still freelancing for them, and they hadn't increased my column rate. And I think this since George W. Bush. So so right now, so yeah, as I was saying, as I replied to somebody else, it's like I'm glad to say that it's not a question of where I'm going to be writing, but excuse me, of if I'm going to be writing tech anymore, but where. So I'll be certainly hoping so I can find a regular columnist gig somewhere else. But there are a couple of things I'm looking at right now, and there's almost certainly going to be like a newsletter or an update to my a new version of my website, so that I will be able to do a lot of the stuff that I was unable to do for the Sun-Times because it had to go through editors and I couldn't just post things right to the site. One of the reasons why we had been talking I had not posted anything to the Sun-Times in months because we were really talking about, I really think we can have an opportunity to do this, that, and the other. So we were talking for a while, but just didn't work out. So again, nothing against the Sun-Times. They're still, again, they've got such a legend to live up to, and they're people working really, really hard every single day and living up to that legend. So please don't cancel your Sun-Times subscriptions. It's still a wonderful, wonderful paper.
Yeah, we know.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, and we know Andy will find a great home. And of course, you always have a home with us, Andy. And I'm sure Mike Hurley feels the same way.
you'll understand if the next time I visit, I might take more snacks home with me.
You take all you want.
If you, well, if you got any other like Twit clothing items or like canned goods that are non-perishable.
All the fleeces you can wear, and we'll get you a case of Mexican Coca-Cola just for you.
Soup.
CW, but now the place to find Andy, now more than ever, CWOB.com. And I'm sure in a publication near you soon. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring, ZipRecruiter has changed the world for the better. Let me tell you this right now. Of course, you know that one of the best features of ZipRecruiter is you can post once there and get to 100-plus job sites with a single click of the mouse. That means, of course, that you're going to reach out to as many places, as many corners of the world as possible. The right person's out there, but how do you find them? But ZipRecruiter goes a step beyond that as well, because they not only reach out and put your posting everywhere, they also look for the right people and introduce them to you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies the right people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. That is the smarter way to hire. ZipRecruiter built the platform that finds the right job candidates for you. It's revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, it's so successful, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter will get a quality candidate through the site in as little as one day. In just one day. In just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive in the ZipRecruiter interface, so you can't even miss a great match. The interface is also great. It really makes it easy for you to screen, rank, and hire the right people fast. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Now you can try it for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Break. It is the smartest way to hire. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. So the Apple event is over. Was not as we had hoped, perhaps, the time that Apple announced a new MacBook Air, a new Mac Mini, a new iPad Mini, none of the above. In fact, really nothing has changed. Nothing much has changed in the Mac lineup. So will it be in June, Tanya Engst?
Yes, I believe in June we'll see many new things. It's fun to speculate, but certainly we could see a new iPad mini. We could have some clarification about the whole laptop range, right? Because we got MacBook Airs and MacBooks, and it's sometimes a little hard to figure out what's where with the lineups and the weights and the prices. We could see new desktop Macs. We could have announcements of future iMac Pros or Mac Pros. Sky's the limit. Who knows?
Go ahead, Andy.
There was one piece of Mac news, the Classroom app that's used as the dashboard, is coming to the Mac. So now if the teacher wants to use a Mac to control all those iPads in the classroom, it'll work. So that's nice.
That's good. Did anybody say, hey, Tim? It's like a presidential press conference. That question as you're going out the door. Tim, what about the new Mac Pro? Tim, I can't hear you. Anybody at all? No,
there was the traditional scrum in which Tim like made an appearance on one of the demo floors and was surrounded by cameras of people who want to get pictures of him and with him. And I'm sure there was somebody who had asked that question, but I didn't hear it.
Nothing. Dead silence. So we need so many new Macs, but And how about, I wonder, does this in some way indicate maybe an increased commitment to the iPad from Apple and iOS and maybe making iOS the operating system of the future? Or is this just, it doesn't seem like it.
I don't know if it indicates anything that we didn't know before about their interest in the iPad. It does show exactly what Apple can achieve when they declare something to be a priority inside the company. So they have made a beautiful $300 computer, and they have built an entire educational ecosystem about it that's not just simply a me too sort of solution. That's how deeply they can mobilize when they feel as though this is an important market. You could, if we were going to be a little bit lean back in the chairs, sipping whiskey, we could say, yeah, but you know, so they weren't integrating Macs into the classroom. They're not making a $500 MacBook Air, are they? So it's still up in the air. Hopefully hopefully we'll have the same sort of evangelical event about the Mac in the future as we did about the iPad. But if you have any doubt that they really are building the company up on the back of iOS, this would have dispelled the last of it.
Maybe there's some hope. Kara Swisher, it's been announced at MSNBC and Vox that Kara Swisher and Chris Hayes will be interviewing Tim Cook for airing on April 6th at 8 p.m. on MSNBC. Revolution, Apple changing the world. Yeah, I don't think there'll be any tough questions, but maybe.
I think that's a public event tomorrow, as a matter of fact, here in Chicago.
Yeah.
So it says something that Tim is staying an extra day here. And he's not going to the Navy Pier and taking a ride in the Ferris wheel. He's definitely Rahm Emanuel was made an appearance backstage. Excuse me, in the demo room. He's definitely talking to educators. He's definitely talking to government. He's definitely making the hard pitch. And Chicago, I think when they have all the great news, hopefully the great news coming up about how people are using the new iPads. Hopefully, a lot of it's going to be coming out of Chicago.
Good. And I also hope there'll be something about a MacBook or a MacBook Air or something like that.
Hopefully.
There is a rumor. Ming-Chi Kuo at KGI Securities, who's become the king of Mac rumors, has said that there will be a Series 4 Apple Watch this year and that it will be bigger, a 15% larger display. I don't think you can get any more bezel-less, so that, I guess, means a larger watch as well. With better battery life, enhanced health monitoring. Go ahead.
They could mean greater pixel density.
Oh, maybe, yeah. There have been rumors that they're going to use micro LED for the Apple Watch, but that wouldn't be this year. That's a couple of years off.
That's a couple of years off. Yeah.
I say they're going to make a bigger wrist for me while.
I know. I don't see.
Mine actually went down from what I had before, so I'm still the 42-inch, you know, I mean, compared to like a Citizen, you know, kind of watch that I had before, it was, so, you know, I would definitely.
If it had better battery life and more capabilities, yeah. Maybe. I mean, really, the challenge of the watch is that small display is very hard to put a good user interface on. It's funny how it's grown on me. I really think that this is 42. But Tanya, you probably wear a 38. You don't wear the
42. Yeah, I wear a 38. So I'm looking at it. I'm thinking that perhaps they could sort of wrap the display around the edges.
Ooh.
A little. Yeah, kind of a curved display. And I could probably get a few more pixels into it by really taking advantage of the edge.
Now, actually, as I look at mine, I notice that even though the glass goes around, the display itself is actually kind of centered.
Nothing there.
Yeah. So those bezels actually aren't really used, the non-bezels. So there really are bezels on this. So maybe they could make it bigger without make the display go around more. You're right, yeah.
That's our feature request for Apple.
Okay. Make it bigger.
My only feature request is watch faces.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the only thing that I miss for the whole thing is just watch faces. Like, if someone asks me, every time someone asks me, what would you put on the watch? I'd be like, watch faces.
Really?
Like more watch faces?
Yeah.
I saw a new proposed watch face on Reddit. Let me see if I can find it. Somebody.
I don't understand it. I mean, I literally just can't quite get my head around. I know people say, oh, Apple's never going to give us control of watch faces. I'm like, I don't understand why. Why can't we design our own watch faces?
Because, you know, it's on Android Wear, or now just what it's called, Wear OS, the ugliest watch faces ever. But I guess it's your choice, right? You can.
It's my choice. You know, the thing is that I want a technical watch face that does a bunch of things that I need it to do.
I agree.
And I, you know, when I'm in production, I want to be able to have seconds, and I don't want to be the goofy exercise. Every time I say I want seconds, everyone sends me to the exercise one. I don't want that. That looks like it belongs on Robin Williams and Mork and Mindy. And so I want like a technical looking one that has a whole bunch of information that I'm interested in. And I know that Apple is not going to design that because I have very specific needs. So
more complications.
Let me do it.
Here's the Apple Watch Face concept from P7OEL on Reddit. I would like, but this is an example of that's with four complications plus the calendar plus the day date. This is a very nice display, very easy to use. There's no reason why Apple shouldn't allow this kind of third party display, right?
Well, it's great to have, even beyond making a practical watch face like that, I have a watch face for my Android Wear that's a planet, and there's a cartoon rocket ship that's the second hands. I've got another one that it's just a digital display, but there's a kitty cat. And when the watch goes into sleep mode, you know, where it gets just black and white and just the screen, the kitty cat goes to sleep. And it's the same reason why the watch bands are such a wonderful idea for the Apple Watch. It makes this watch into your watch. Most of these third party watch faces for Android Wear kind of junk. But really, again, all I care about is my kitty cat and my rocket ship. After that, I'm glad that both of those exist. It makes that watch mine.
Sometimes Apple takes the lack of choice to a fetishistic extreme.
Yes.
Oh, but you got new watch bands.
Woohoo.
Now, see, if Renee were here, he would be so excited. New spring watch bands from Apple. And look, new iPhone and iPad cases as well. The yellow, blue, and red silicone cases. I'm sorry, did I say the yellow, blue, and red? I meant lemonade, red raspberry, and denim blue. The $49 leather cases now will come in bright orange, spring yellow, electric blue, and soft pink. You've got sleeves for the pencil and in pink and blue, soft pink and electric blue, as well as new iPad smart covers. And here are the new bands. Yes, wait for it. Lemonade, red raspberry, denim blue, new Nike bands in cargo, khaki and black, barely rose and pearl pink, and black and white. Woven nylon bands in hot pink, flashlight. Tahoe blue and marine green, classic buckle and soft pink, spring yellow and electric blue. It's very springy colors. This is really, I bet you this is a huge profit center for Apple now. These are $50 bands at best. In some cases, $150. If you get the new single tour from Hermes, $439. I don't know how Renee Ritchie can afford this. It's going to bankrupt the boy.
Sometimes, can you put a price on style though?
No, really.
Well, I think the new colors look great, but one of the things I was just noticing this week, someone was asking me, should they get a sports watch band for their Apple Watch? And I realized I'm still using my original band that I bought with the original watch. I've moved it up onto the new watches as I've gone through, but this thing has been through crazy long runs in the mud. It's been through 100-mile cycling outings. It's had, you know, sweat, mud, not too much in the way of tears, not too much blood, but just a lot of use in and out of the shower, in and out of the pond. And it looks great. There aren't any stains on it. It hasn't ripped.
You have the fluoroelastomer.
Yeah, I'm a little cheap sometimes about how much I want to pay for, you know, a watch band, which I'm probably going to, you know, break or abuse and have to throw out in a month or two. So I was a little unhappy with the cost, but I've completely gotten my money's worth.
I have maybe a half dozen Apple Watch bands, including this one, this leather one, which is a cheap third party knockoff. I have a couple of third party knockoffs, which I mostly regret, but they're so much cheaper. It's hard to resist them.
I bought a few and then I just went back to still have the original. Yeah.
The fluoroelastomer does your right wear very, very well. Tanya, would you ever consider another maker's runner's watch?
Yeah, I have a Garmin.
Aha. That's what the real runners wear, the serious runners.
Well, the problem is, let's just say, for example, that you're running as fast as you can around a track. So you have to pay attention so that you keep turning at the turning radius, or you'll trip or go into the wrong lane, right? And let's say you want to know how fast you're going. So if you lift up your wrist to look at your Apple Watch, that tiny little pause.
Oh, that's not good.
Not happening.
Not good.
So that's just one of the reasons why the Garmin is standout. You can also turn on or off a Garmin while wearing thick, heavy mittens.
We should mention Tanya lives in Ithaca, New York, where thick, heavy mittens are de rigueur 9 months of the year.
Oh, Totally. So, I mean, the Apple Watch is really great. I have Strava on it. I will use it in a pinch. And it has gotten better. But I think for people who are, more serious about their running and cycling, Garmin is still where it's at.
Yeah. What about Fitbit, which is the number two wearable after Apple, but quite distantly after Apple? They just announced this Fitbit Versa, which is really an Apple Watch. Or maybe it's Pebble meets Apple Watch. $200. I've seen some reviews saying that the notifications aren't great. They have some flaws, but it does do a lot of the things the Apple Watch does. It kind of looks. You might fool somebody. Oh, and it's also hard to change the bands, I think they said.
And then, well, I can tell you, my mom, my mother-in-law, and my father-in-law, Fitbits.
Yeah.
We like them a lot.
Yeah, I see a lot of them as I'm walking around. I see a ton of Fitbits on people's wrists.
Yeah. And in the case of my father-in-law, he even has an Apple Watch but prefers Fitbit.
Interesting.
My father, who is retired now, but he was in the tech industry his whole life, he finally got his hands on one of our old Apple Watches and he converted over. But I think he liked all the features and didn't get boggled by all the settings and choices. So he's different, I think, than your typical retiree in that regard.
I think Fitbit, it took some tips from Pebble when they acquired them. And I think that the Versa is probably is aimed directly at the Apple Watch and at a lower price point. I think may end up eating some of the Apple sales. The company that makes Apple's products, Foxconn, seems to be diversifying. They just bought Belkin for a lot of money.
They bought a couple things, didn't they?
Well, Belkin owns Wemo. Belkin had been acquiring stuff. So they bought Linksys from Cisco a while ago. They own Wemo. So Phyn, Phyn, $866 million for Foxconn. Do you think Apple should worry that its, chief manufacturer of the iPhone has ambitions in other areas, not directly competing with Apple?
No, because any company would be very, very happy to sell a part to Apple in the kind of quantity that they need for iPhones.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
and I can't think of any part that's so strategic in nature that they can withhold it from Apple and affect anything that Apple wants to do.
Yeah.
Well, and Samsung builds the most competitive phone to Apple, and Apple still buys billions of dollars of
good point
stuff from them for the iPhone.
Good point. Excellent point. Yeah, I'm actually really liking the S9 Plus. It is a worthy competitor. It's the anti-Apple phone. It has a headphone jack. It has an SD card. It has fingerprint and face recognition. And it even has a terrifyingly scary an emoji feature. It just really doesn't look good. But you want to see my Animojis from the Samsung Galaxy S9? I can show you.
I'm very curious now. What makes them terrifying?
They're in the what we call Uncanny Valley. So this is supposedly me. There I am blowing you a kiss, Alex.
Anderson Cooper and Bill Clinton having a baby.
Yeah. None of them look like... I mean, none of the...
Why is your hair white?
Well, I chose the white hair. I could make it a different color. It's the closest thing they had to my actual hair. You've seen me, right, Tanya? You're not. My hair is whitish, and I decided on the blue suit. This is as close as I could get to having it look like me. It takes
looks
a picture
like
George
of Washington.
You. George Washington does look like a wig. It looks like a powdered wig. Now I will never see it with the same eyes, Tanya. Just for that, you're getting this sent to your messages.
Walked into a barbershop and said, "Give me the Mike Pence."
It kind of looks like that, doesn't it? That you could see a little bit of me in that face.
Yeah, the eyes are better.
A little bit. I look like Bill Clinton in 1992, but
so they don't have anything that's animated. It's all, I mean, it's animated, but it's not.
No, it's
not
doing
what the
animated
emoji does, talking. But
no, I can do that.
You can't drive it.
No, I can do that. Yeah,
but you can.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not very good. I could do it. I don't have the phone on me, but it's not very good.
Okay.
It's not a selling point. But I do think that this really cleared as you look at all the features of this phone that Samsung was saying, okay, we want to give you a real alternative to an iPhone X, so we're going to do, it's the anti iPhone X. And it's nice. I mean, it's an alternative. And it's cheaper. Oh, I didn't mention this. Starts at $720 for the S9. The S9 Plus is $840. I'm liking it quite a bit. It's better. It's the best Samsung phone yet.
I think the three most significant phones out there are whatever the latest iPhone is, whatever the latest Pixel phone is, and the latest Galaxy Note. Because the Galaxy Note is, I don't care about anything but having a phone that could do bloody anything and anything I want it to do. I'm willing to have a huge, stupid screen. I'm willing to have, if it means that I can read books on it and have a stylus. I want a stylus, and I want a card slot, and
I want everything.
I love how it's like, no, I want everything.
I want it all. WWDC lottery is over. Apple is sending emails to the victors. Good luck to you all. January 4th, McHenry Convention Center in San Jose. That's going to be the next big Apple event. That's not too far off. We'll see some other things, I'm sure, at that. Apple is proposing some new emojis, and I like the emojis they're proposing. Guide dogs, wheelchairs, and other disability-themed emoji, including there's a prosthetic arm and a prosthetic leg. Here's a hearing aid.
And I do think this is more, I think for Apple, this is definitely more than marketing.
I do too.
This is something that comes from Tim Cook. I think that he's really interested in inclusion, interested in trying to make this available, and making people feel comfortable with the technology. I don't get this as a marketing thing as much as just Tim Cook thinks it's important.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you, and I agree with him. I think these should be in the Unicode specification. They're proposing them. The next meeting of the Unicode Emoji Committee is April in San Jose, as a matter of fact. Jeremy, I'm sure, will come on the show and talk about these, and then we'll find out if they get approved, some point in next year for Emoji 12.0. Yeah, it's about time. I'm all for it. Plus, I can use that hearing aid emoji. I can't hear you. I don't know what you're saying. Don't talk to me. No, I think this is fantastic. I'm very happy that they're doing that. Any other stories before we take a break here? We mentioned the student accounts. Let me clarify this, and you can help me, Andy, if I get it wrong. You'll get an Apple ID as a student using the new software. It can be tied to your Apple ID. Apple wants to be very clear, though, that no information will pass to Apple from this student ID, which will be assigned to you at your school, that it's completely private, that only you and your teacher will know anything about that.
That's correct. The administrator that's administering these iPads, they can actually set it up so that as soon as a student is added to the student database, they can have software automatically generate an Apple ID for them.
Nice.
And then as soon as they leave the school system, they can then delete that ID. So they can spontaneously generate like 1,000 Apple IDs in like a minute. So it's pretty different from what we're expecting.
That's fantastic.
And yeah, they didn't hit the privacy angle as hard as I thought they might have, and as hard as they could. They made sure where it was relevant to say that, and we don't have any, all this stuff is just between the student and the teacher. Apple never gets this information. This never leaves the cloud. They could have hit that a lot harder, particularly given news of last week. But perhaps it was more gentlemanly to leave that alone, just to keep it to what they needed to say.
Yeah, and actually, I think Google has a pretty good privacy story. After getting dinged with Classroom, they've made a real effort to make sure that the students are private. And they said, we don't want the student information, and we're not going to get the student information if they use Classroom. Tim did talk about Cambridge Analytica and Facebook. He said Facebook's collection of user data should not exist. This is a easy thing for Tim Cook to say because, of course, Apple doesn't collect this kind of stuff and would love Facebook to, well, I don't know if they'd love it, but they can easily go after Facebook. Apple CEO said the situation is dire and he thinks regulation is necessary. This is while he's talking in, of all places, China. Privacy not exactly at a premium in China. He says
that's kind of bad timing.
And we talked about this on Saturday. Snuck in at the 11th hour into the omnibus spending bill that the House and Senate passed and President Trump signed into law last week. Snuck in at the last minute was the Cloud Act, which a lot of companies, I think including Apple, supported, that basically give law enforcement warrantless access to user data. And that there you can even have a treaty with a foreign power that lets that foreign power get data from American companies about any of their citizens. And in that, if, for instance, somebody from China is having a conversation with me, in that conversation will be me as well. And no warrant required. This is just going to be handed over. I think the big companies like Apple and Microsoft, Google and Facebook wanted this bill because it kind of lets them off the hook. But not a good thing for privacy by any means.
Yeah, I think I really if I had my one ridiculous, not going to be answered, shouted question at Tim Cook today, I really wish that he would clarify Apple's position on individual privacy from companies, that which seems to be very different from their policy regarding Apple's protecting user privacy against those persons' own governments. And like we're, I mean, we're joking around about how this is happening. He's making these statements in China, but I'm not worried about my life ending over a marketer scraping data from my Facebook account. If I were a Chinese citizen, realizing that I've now got a social media score that is follow me around, and might mean that the next time I get pulled over for a broken headlight, no one's going to see me again because they figured out a way to make sure that, oh, he's someone we don't want on the loose. That's a bad thing.
Yeah, I talked on iOS today about the fact that in I think it's in Shenzhen, actually, China, they've had for a long time been using face recognition on jaywalkers.
Yeah.
And if you jaywalk in China, they will put they have 7K cameras on the corners. And if you jaywalk, they'll put your picture up on a big digital screen with your name, your government ID to shame you. And now they're planning to send you messages, text messages to further shame you. I guess jaywalking is such a problem in China. And the worst is, it will affect your social score. They now, as you mentioned, Annie, they kind of have a FICO score for bad behavior. And if you're a repeat jaywalker, it can ding you on your social credit score, which means you may not be able to buy plane tickets, train tickets, or even get a loan from a bank. So this is what we're looking at. This is in China, not here, but this is the kind of thing we're looking at.
No, they're not using, I mean, and they don't need to give you that social score. They don't need social media to do that. I mean,
no.
What they're doing, I mean, they may use it. No, they may use it, but they can just do it from just cameras.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of information that they can gather or use as measures.
And, of course, I really think about it. What if, you know, you look a lot like some jerk and you get his social credit because he's misbehaving, you're not, but face recognition can't tell the difference. That's not good. And I doubt there's any appeal process.
Well, I'm more concerned about how much this can grow if that becomes sort of embedded into the digital economy of China, where this is just something that is another piece of data, just like your height, weight, and eye color.
Right.
That's always there. I mean, it sounds like I'm making a joke, but we're talking about the Uber self-driving car that hit a bicyclist, which leads to, of course, lots of conversations about how do you program an AI to save life when you know that when the AI knows that, okay, this is a situation where there's going to be an accident. I just get to choose what kind of accident happens. I either avoid this person that's going to be heading into me and crash into an oncoming lane, or I just simply plow into what's in front of me. And again, it sounds like I'm joking, but 5 or 10 years from now, I can't say that I don't believe that China, if they have regulations about the kind of software that a self-driving car would say, is that would be a feature. Is this somebody who's a boon to society? Are they helping out society? And I'm not saying, okay,
he's got a low social score. Run him over.
Oh man, he picked his. We got cameras of him picking his nose while waiting for a bus.
Well, I mean, people. I mean, we can talk about the low social score, but I mean, people's social, how you interact with your social network is affecting you now. You know, like it's not something that we can talk about this being added to a government score, but you people are not getting jobs. They're getting fired. They're getting all kinds of things because of what they do in social or what they're even accused of doing. And so I think that this is already, you know, we're already kind of waist deep in this, you know, and this is just an iteration of that process. Formalization,
I guess. When it's a government that's doing that, the government that has not just controlling whether you can get an apartment or not, but if you can get an apartment, if you can live somewhere, if you can get a job somewhere, and it doesn't matter if you go to a different company that's not using this credit score, there is a government that is following you around, and also a government that, again, I've got my mental shot clock on talking about China, but again, it behoves us to remember that this is a government that will, if you have a dissident, a poet, an artist that's speaking out against the government, that person tends to disappear, or they're not allowed to leave their house forever. There are journalists that tend to disappear, and you just don't groups getting together for innocuous reasons in certain numbers suddenly get the attention of the government.
Yeah. Not just China, terrifying. Russia, Turkey.
Not just China.
Russia, lots of countries now.
Turkey's even worse. But
yeah,
it's a slippery slope,
and I don't want to enter it. And I think with Facebook knows, you know, we just found out Facebook was tracking Android phones, not just your contact list, but when you gave Facebook Messenger access to your contact list, it also collected every call you made, who you made it to, and how long you were on the phone for them. And just, I mean, Facebook now has enough knowledge to know if you're on a booty call, with whom, for how long. I mean, and they have that information, and it's not a hard thing.
They do have access to the motion sensor, the cameras. They could probably figure out how fast you are.
Yeah. But if you're both on Facebook, they know, hey, they met up. Here's where they met up. Here's for how long. I mean, it is terrifying.
Well, I'm not saying that it's a good thing. I'm just saying that we're already knee deep in it. Yeah. It's happening everywhere.
We don't have a government that's wants to use that. But now the government can get the information without a warrant.
We shouldn't assume that our government's not using it.
No, but at some point it could get worse. It could.
I'm just saying we should not assume that they're not taking full advantage of the access that they have. Even if you look at your payment schedule, I mean, you use your credit card at the Safeway. I mean, they are tracking absolutely. When you get the coupons, those coupons aren't based on what you just bought. They're based on your entire trajectory.
This stuff's been going on forever. The difference is it's weaponized now because you have all these disparate databases combined and the computing power to really start to generate some very interesting inferences, and I think that's very powerful, very dangerous.
Yeah, and that's why, again, I really think that we practically need a constitutional amendment that defines our rights digitally. I mean, the really scary stories are about a government like China, but it even just gets me upset that there are companies that do nothing but drive cars in parking lots and streets with license plate scanners, just simply building databases of what cars were where, and because that's a really valuable data point you can sell to somebody who wants to use that as an ingredient in another little stew they're making about we need to find this person or we need to figure out who's been in the same neighborhood where prostitution has been happening. It's like, no, you know, you don't. When I do buy a new car, I'm going to build like with a Raspberry Pi or something, a motorized thing that will just drop a curtain in front of the license plates while it's parked.
We've been talking about this for years. The data smog. That's the information that you're just trailing off of you. I mean, my Tesla knows every single, and it knows when I put my foot on my brake, and it sends it all back to Elon.
He goes up and searches, and he says, what is Leo doing today? Where is Leo?
No, they'll punish you. No, seriously, Elon, they will punish you based on what they've learned from the log. They will. And I thought, hey, it's really convenient to have a fast track in my window so I don't have to pay tolls, except that every time I cross the bridge now, they know here comes Leo. And it just goes on and on and on. And if you think about what they know about you, you just better pray they don't have prisons and nuclear weapons. By the way, that Uber story is turning now against Uber somewhat. The state of Arizona has banned Uber's self-driving vehicles from the state. The governor did that. And NVIDIA now suspending its self-driving tests on public roads, saying it needs to know more about what happened in the Uber accident. NVIDIA, of course, very involved in this, trying to sell a platform to a lot of companies. What I thought initially was, just kind of sensationalist reporting about self-driving cars is now turning out to be a much larger and much more serious story. Let's take a little break. I want to get your, I don't know, Tanya, if we warned you, I want to get your pick of the week. Could be anything. Could be, I think.
Absolutely.
Adam picked tires or something the last time he was on.
I got my pick. It's in the spreadsheet.
Okay, good. Yeah. Tires is fine. I'm not saying anything against tires. Anything you want. We'll take a break and have more in just a bit with Tanya Engst from tidbits.com, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core, Chicago. Oh, I mean, Celestial Waste of Bandwidths. He's in Chicago right now. Andy Anako. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. When it comes time to get a home loan, get it from the best. The best lender in the country. Number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years running. The biggest because people love them. They keep going back for more loans. And from the geek's point of view, the easiest to use. I'm talking about Quicken Loans and now their entirely online mortgage process. They call it Rocket Mortgage because it lifts the burden. Lifts the burden of getting a home loan. You don't have to go to the bank anymore. You don't have to fill out an application of 20 pages. And then go back home and find stuff in the attic, your pay stubs from 2014 and all that stuff. No, Rocket Mortgage makes it easy. You can do it on your smartphone at an open house. You can say, hey, honey, we should buy this house. Yeah, we should buy it. Well, let's get the loan. You go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. You answer a few simple questions to identify yourself. They say, can we have permission to get the financial information we need from, because they have trusted relationships with all the financial institutions. You say, yeah. They go out and get it. They crunch the numbers. Then based on your income, your assets, and your credit, Rocket Mortgage analyzes all the home loan options. By the way, this is not just for buying. This could be for refining, too. They have great refi options. Analyzes them all, finds out what you qualify for. You get to choose the term, the rate, the down payment. You find the right one for you, and then you're done. 8 minutes in, you've got a loan. Now, how's that? Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. You didn't even have to put on pants. Rocket Mortgage. Apply simply. Understand fully. Mortgage confidently. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. You could do it while you're watching March Madness, the Final Four. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Okay, Tanya, let's see it. What's your pick of the week?
All right. My pick of the week is an ebook. It is Take Control of Apple Home Automation.
We need this one badly.
And why did I pick this book? Well, it's written by Josh Centers, who writes an awful lot for Tidbits. This is his, I believe this is his third Take Control title. So he is a pretty seasoned author at this point. It's edited by a fellow named Dan Frakes. I feel very strongly knowing who edited
Dan.
A book.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know Dan.
Yeah.
Knowing who edited a book can tell you a lot about the quality of the book. And Dan, absolutely top-notch guy, worked for Macworld for years. I believe he's with The Wirecutter now, but he's always done some freelancing for Take Control books. And I've just utterly impressed with him as an editor. So that's a huge plus for this book. But it's a book, but it's kind of like a mega magazine or a fun-to-read guidebook in that it's not like this boring book thing that you're just going to have to read from cover to cover and it's going to have a lot of long words in it. A little bit more like a magazine in that regard. Unlike a lot of stuff that you read nowadays on the web, the thing has no advertisements, no videos flashing at you, just a really well-organized assemblage of information about home automation with Apple as the kind of focus of all that. It's got a lot of nuggets. Like, there's a list of home automation misconceptions. There are a lot of ideas, some quite funny, for why you would or would not want to install a smart door lock. And it's even got 10 tips for preventing haunted house syndrome. So
that is a real syndrome.
There's some fun stuff here.
Stuff turns on in the middle of the night. My Roomba comes on at 2 a.m. and makes me insane.
You talk to Josh about
it. I gotta stop that. Stop the insanity. That's funny. Haunted house.
Anyway. The thing is written for people who want to just get started, really need to get their head around the whole thing. And it's also written for people who are already hobbyists, have a few items, and want to go further with it, but kind of rationalize the system and avoid unintended consequences.
Awesome. You can find it.
That is my pick.
TakeControlBooks.com, an ebook, $14.99, and we definitely need. And by the way, there's always a sample on the Take Control Books site, so you can always read it before you buy it. Thank you, Tanya. Thank you. Alex Lindsay, a pick from you, my friend.
Yeah, so my pick, and I think I have it, I can pull it up here. This is a Stream Deck. So what Stream Deck is it's got a, this is a little controller, kind of like X keys. So you've got these little controllers here, and just USB out, and you can actually identify these. I mean, you can actually customize, these controllers here. So if we look at, if I jump over, I think to here, this is the controller for it, and it works pretty instantaneously. So for instance, all of these sections here are all these different things that they've already pre-built for you. I am not using any of them. So I'm using them for just key codes that you would normally use X keys, but it's a lot easier to use if you actually, look at this, if I grab something and drag it in here. So I just popped it in, to there. And then I jump back to, back to my video, you'll see that area, that's the new one that I just added. So, so that is already, kind of thrown in there, and it's got those pieces. Now I'm using it as a control deck for, for another computer that can play QuickTimes and so on and so forth. So, these are just keystrokes, but I designed these. These are just JPEGs that I made them so that they look, they're not very pretty. But it tells me what I'm going to do when I hit those things. And so it's a, it's not much different than X keys, except it's about the same. It's oddly enough about the same price as X keys. It's about $150. And the ability, what steps it over? We still use X keys. We use X keys for a lot of kind of industrial strength controls. But what I like about Stream Deck is that it's super easy to set up. You plug it in, you start dragging and dropping stuff into it, and now you can control your computer. And especially if you're doing broadcasts like this, being able to just have a bunch of things that you can kind of throw. It's very geared towards the Twitch player, the YouTube streamer, those types of things. There's a lot of integration with OBS, with XSplit. Not exactly the stuff we use all the time, but definitely things that if you're interested in that, or if you're just interested in kind of a very basic automation for your presentations or other things, it's a really easy to use. I mean, just got it, started playing with it. It fixed a bunch of problems that I had. So and I'm pretty happy with it.
I think NAB this year, the National Association of Broadcasters show, is going to be all less about broadcasters, almost entirely about streamers. That's a huge market.
Well, it's a big market. I think that I think it'll still be. I mean, I've been to NAB. I think it's going to be 23 years or 20. No, I'm sorry, 24 years this year straight.
Wow.
It is. The money that's being spent on broadcast is still a giant number. When you're buying, some of these devices and some of the cameras, people are spending just insane. They have helicopters. They're selling helicopters with camera balls on the front. It's all of that stuff. So there's still an enormous amount of heavy iron that is sold. But definitely something that's growing very quickly is a lot of these tools, and definitely people are paying a lot of attention to it. I mean, the live streaming is becoming, more and more of a, and podcasting and all those other things, all the other ancillary pieces. You'll definitely see whole sections at Canon, sections at Sony. The real empowerment for this is as a single company is probably Blackmagic. But right across from Blackmagic is an equally large booth called Grass Valley. Grass Valley's not making tools for podcasters.
No,
those are the Those are the big iron, right across the street. So there's still, it's still a pretty big business as far as broadcast goes, but it is changing quickly. There's not as much, and these little tools make it even easier for people to build shows that look closer and closer and sometimes start to expand past broadcast. One of the things that you can do really easily is incorporate comments and tweets and everything else with this little box because of all the pre-built. You just like set up your Twitter account and it'll just tie it, tie all the stuff in and go grab the things that you want. So it's doing a lot of things in the background for you. And so one of the things that this enables that broadcast is a little behind on is actually interactivity, being able to pull your comments in, being able to pull those bits and pieces in. And so that's part of the advantage there.
Oh, this is from Elgato.
Yeah, it's so funny. When I see those guys, I'm like, didn't you guys make like a little thing that digitized? Yeah. I'm always confused because they used to make the thing where you take your cable TV and you put it into your, have you ever like your RCA connection?
Yeah, no, the iTV. I love my Elgato. Okay, so this is a weird coincidence because the Take Control book that Tanya was talking about is sponsored by Elgato because they have Eve, which is a home control device.
Right.
And a lot of that book is about Eve. And we were earlier on the new screensavers, we were talking about whatever happened to Elgato. Now I can't get away from Elgato. They're back.
Yeah,
I want this. This looks awesome.
How much is it? Those guys, it's $150.
So
you'll love it. I actually think you'd love that, have that in your studio, because that's just one little thing that you can add a whole bunch of little bits and pieces to what you want to do.
I'm thinking for my studio, it'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. The only thing I wish is that you could build more complex behaviors like you do with X keys. So X keys, you can basically have it go to the market and buy some eggs and bring them back. I mean, like you just build these very complex solutions based on one keystroke. And so X keys does that better. This is pretty much they built all the tools for you. And oh yeah, you can do a key press, and that can be automated. But you're not. There's no easy way for you to build your own, more complex work throws, which is why we would still keep on using X keys for some of the stuff that we do. But if you look at X keys and you download the demo and your eyes cross when you're trying to figure out how to make it work, then this is the thing for you. If you look at X keys and you go, oh my gosh, this is the best thing since sliced bread, then that's the thing for you. we have a little need for both. So,
wow, this is very cool. I'm glad Elgato is still around doing very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Andy Iannocco, pick of the week.
Probably a quick one, but the new Pi Day was a couple of weeks ago, and so the Raspberry Pi organization came out with an updated version of the Raspberry Pi 3. That's not the Raspberry Pi 3B Plus, and that's the single board Linux computer, which has got Bluetooth, it's got Wi-Fi, it's got four USB ports, it's got HDMI, it's got everything but a power supply. It's just a tiny little credit card sized board that you can use as a conventional desktop machine with any HDMI screen, keyboard and mouse, or you can build really cool robots and stuff out of it, or you can put it into a case and use it as a portable media player or set it up to emulate the Mac or emulate game systems. What I'm getting at is that there's a lot of joy that I miss from early computing that I don't get out of Windows and I don't get from the Mac or iOS. And that's the ability to say, here is a ugly green board with pins sticking out of it that can do anything you want to learn how to make it do. And so this is the one computer that I still use that I feel as though I understand everything that makes it work. And if there's anything I want to do involving a computer, I can make it do this, including build a new computer or build a new robot or build this or that. Another story about the move. I'm trying to make decisions about my window treatments, and I know. Who the hell am I? I'm in bed looking at the windows and thinking that it wouldn't be hard to like get some stepper motors and just like have motorized rollers like bring the thing up. And immediately I thought about, oh, that's great. I could put like an Arduino or have a Raspberry Pi controlling all of it. And whereas before in the pre Raspberry Pi and Arduino days, I would have probably given up on it because I would have had to have done it using my analog understanding of electronics versus a really good, like, networkable, computer controllable thing. With Raspberry Pi, it's so easy to figure out how to attach switches and motors and other things to it. It really is. It's $35, and I really recommend people buy one. Even if you don't know what you're going to do with it, just have it sitting around. At some point, it's going to be raining, and the way you're going to be spending your Saturday gets canceled. Then you remember the Raspberry Pi. You'll say, "Gee, I wonder what it's like to set this up as a desktop computer." And then a half hour later, you've got the Raspberry Pi version of Linux installed on it. And you're like, "Oh my God, it's running a Chrome-based operating system. I can do YouTube. I can do what else can it do?" It really leads to a lot of exploration and a lot of joy. Can't recommend it highly enough. $35. You can hardly go wrong.
Oh, they're so much fun. I really love them. Well, my pick of the week, I'm so glad none of you mentioned this. Apple had another big hardware announcement today, and somehow you seem to have all missed this. Shocking. You see this nice silver keyboard I have here? Well, I can now press this button and turn it space gray. Space gray is here, and you don't even pay much more for it, just an extra $20 for the black paint. They also have...
Purdy.
Ooh, Purdy. I feel bad for all the people on eBay trying to get $1,000 for their space gray magic trackpad. Sorry, it's $149 from Apple. Again, a mere $20 premium. How do they justify the premium? Is it more expensive to make it? I don't get it.
It actually is more expensive to make it. I don't know if it's that much more expensive, but it actually is. You know, we pay for a lot of aluminum products for other things, and
it's, you
know,
more expensive.
Getting them... For everybody, if you get it painted black, it's going to be more expensive than if you just get the aluminum.
I see a magic mouse and I want to paint it space gray for an extra few bucks.
I've got the slogan for these two devices. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
You'll hate using them, but now you'll like the color.
That's good. Space gray is available in the Apple Store for the trackpad, the mouse, and the keyboard. Not the keypadless keyboard, oddly enough. This just the magic keyboard with numeric keypad. Guess they couldn't make the little one in black. We are out of time. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Tanya, always a pleasure. Thank you for spending your afternoon with us. Tanya Engst is at tidbits.com. She's on the Twitter at Tanya Engst. And watch her whizzing by you at a race in the upper New York State area soon. What's your next race?
Oh, the Skunk Cabbage Classic.
Okay. Well, have fun in the Skunk Cabbage Classic. How many miles, or do you ask if you measure it in cabbages? How many cabbages is that?
10 cabbages.
Oh, 10K. It's a 10 cabbage. Thank you, Tanya. Great to see you. Andy Yanako, CWOB.com. If you have need for the best damn writer in the biz, he's out there.
A couple of the notes. If you're in Chicago, I'm actually at the PBS studios right now, WTTW. So I'll be on that channel tonight at 7. Tomorrow in Boston, I will be at the Boston Public Library on WGBH Public Radio, also talking about this from noon onward.
Nice.
And if you're looking for my coverage of today's event, it's going to be on Fast Company's website tomorrow. I'm running it tonight and should be up sometime tomorrow. Go to my website and also check out my Twitter feed. We'll be posting until I find a regular gig where just come here and see what I write every single week. I will be posting places where I'm writing on Twitter and stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. At IHNATKO. And thanks to the radio station or the TV station for letting you use that booth. I didn't realize that. That was very nice of them. WTTW.
Mm-hmm. It's Windows to the world.
It's a palindrome. Same either
Indeed
way.
It is.
Yes. And Alex Lindsay at AlexLindsay on the Twitter. That's the best way to keep up with him. He's at pixelcore.com. You can also become a PixelCore member. Yay, at Patreon. PixelCore is at patreon.com/pixelcore.
Yeah, we're doing, I think almost every week we're doing a little ask. You know, like we had Fred in talking about LiDAR last week. We're just talking about live production. So we're just going to keep on having those conversations. So if you're interested in those types of conversations, come on over to Patreon and sign up.
Phenom. Thank you, everybody. Thank you all for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, right after iOS Today. Stop by, join us, be part of the fun. If you are watching live at twit.tv/live, by all means, stop by the chat room at irc.twit.tv so you can be part of the kids in the back of the class throwing spitballs and smashing their iPads, making movies with watermelons and mattresses and all sorts of things. irc.twit.tv. If you can't be here in person or during the live stream, you can always download an on-demand version. That's at twit.tv/mbw. Or subscribe. Go, hey Siri, subscribe to MacBreak Weekly. And that way you'll get a copy in your podcast app each and every week, the minute it's available. Thank you for listening. Now, my friends, back to work because break time is over.